Welcome everyone to this interview where I'm super excited to be talking with Jody Cohen. Firstly, Jody, welcome and thank you for joining me.
Oh, it's always a pleasure to connect with you.
So in this interview, we're going to be talking about the relationship between the parasympathetic nervous system and sleep. And towards the end of last year, Jody did a fantastic online conference, very similar to this, on the parasympathetic nervous system. Just to give people Jody's background, Jody Cohen is a best-selling author, award-winning journalist, and functional health practitioner, and founder of Vibrant Blue Oils, where she has combined her training in nutritional therapy and aromatherapy to create unique proprietary blends of organic and wildcrafted essential oils. She has helped over 50,000 clients heal from brain-related challenges, including anxiety, insomnia, and autoimmunity. For the past 10 years, she has lectured at wellness centers, conferences, and corporations on brain health, essential oils, stress, and detoxification. She's been seen in the New York Times, Wellness Mama, Elephant Journal, and numerous publications. And her website is visited by over 300,000 natural health seekers every year. She's rapidly become a top resource for essential oils education on the internet today. So, Jody, I'd love to just start a little bit with giving people some context of when we're talking about the parasympathetic nervous system. Yeah. What are we talking about? What is it and why is it so important?
Yeah, your nervous system is basically your body's operating system, right? It is your autonomic nervous system controls your automatic functions. So all the things that happen to keep you alive that you don't have to consciously think about. Your breathing, your heart rate, your ability to digest foods, your ability to detoxify, your ability to anti-inflame for your immune system to turn on. It's really the system that keeps you alive. And it has different speeds, so to speak. You know, think about changing gears on a bike. If you're going downhill, you want to be kind of in a high speed. If you're going uphill, you want a downshift. So if there's a threat to your survival, be it an animal chasing you, someone changing lanes and not seeing you and about to hit you, or even something emotional like a fear over finances, a relationship, your own health, all of those things shift your body and shift the chemicals that you release into what's called your sympathetic nervous system. So when there's a threat of danger, either physical or mental and perceived, your hormones change. You're releasing cortisol, which helps to boost your energy so you can flee and survive and run fast. Your focus changes. You suddenly can't, you know, contemplate the universe. You have to focus on your next best option to keep you alive. Anything that's not really critical to surviving that moment kind of downregulates. So your ability to digest your food, to detoxify, to turn on your immune system, to have a thoughtful conversation, to reproduce. And so that's supposed to be kind of a short and acute stress. And then you're supposed to be able to shift gears, you know, and start with the cleanup, the rest, the repair, the heal. That's your parasympathetic nervous system. That's where all of the blood flow is routed back to your organs of digestion. So you can digest, absorb, and assimilate your food, the raw materials, and the building blocks for your health so that you can get rid of the waste that's building up in your system so that your immune system can turn on and kind of take care of things so that you can actually focus on the people in your life and make valuable connections and process emotions and really be in the present moment. Basically, the parasympathetic nervous system is what lets you feel safe. It's kind of the critical foundation to all healing. And the really sad thing is that most people do not really access the parasympathetic branch of their nervous system enough. They're really stuck in that sympathetic survival, fear, and anxiety state. And so it's kind of the most important thing that no one really even knows about.
I think one of the things that for me was really fascinating about your online conference is that you were coming at it from so many different perspectives. There are so many different elements that influence and shape what's happening with our nervous system. And for someone to be able to cultivate and sustain being in a healing state, it's actually quite a lot has to happen to support that. What are some of the key ingredients that support our parasympathetic nervous system being able to activate and function in a healthy way?
Yeah, that's a great question. So the on-off switch between your sympathetic fight or flight and freeze state and your parasympathetic rest, digest, and heal state is the longest nerve in your body that most people have never heard of. It's your vagus nerve. It's cranial nerve number 10. Just to get a little anatomical, just so you can kind of track it, it starts at the base of the skull, splits, it goes around each side of the neck, right behind the ear. If you feel behind your ear on that bone, that's your mastoid bone. That's where it's the most accessible to the surface. And then it winds through your mouth, your larynx, your heart, your lungs, your stomach, your liver, your gallbladder, your intestines, every organ of digestion. And it's kind of the highway between your brain and your body to kind of tell, you know, your body, oh, you're hungry, you need to eat, to tell your brain, you're full, you know, there's a pathogen we detect that you need to respond to. All of these things, it really keeps us healthy. And because it's two-way communication, any area that it innervates, that it touches, like your lungs, you can engage your lungs to turn on your vagus nerve and activate your parasympathetic nervous system. You can take probiotics in your gut. You can give yourself a coffee enema. You can laugh and smile or gag and gargle, you know, or you can stimulate kind of this place right behind the earlobe. And in 2012, there was a neuroscientist out of New York named Kevin Tracy, who started playing with stimulating the vagus nerve right there using kind of an electrical implant, a pacemaker-like device that he surgically implanted, and found amazing results, because when the vagus nerve is stimulated, the anti-inflammatory neurotransmitter acetylcholine is released, and that can really shift your health. For example, the FDA approved this electrical device for depression, epilepsy, and migraines. And so what I've found, that there are a variety of ways to activate the vagus nerve. Some people, you know, gagging yourself with a tongue depressor, not high compliance. Using your tongue like a paintbrush to paint the roof of your mouth, more compliant. You know, taking an essential oil blend and dabbing it behind your ear, very high compliance. So it's kind of, you know, it's like make your own adventure. Different people, you know, want to do different things. But to answer your question, anything that you do that kind of activates any of your organs, breathing techniques are fabulous, helps you literally shift gears. Think of it like a gear shift on a bike. You are changing from the world is overwhelming, I'm afraid, I'm paralyzed, to I feel safe, and you know, I can survive this. I can be okay because I can control how I respond in this moment.
And often to reshape and to change what's happening in our parasympathetic nervous system, we need to come at it from those different perspectives, right? We need to be doing psycho-emotional work sometimes to deal with the things that are triggering and stimulating and sort of wiring our sympathetic system. We need to deal with, you mentioned sort of probiotics and the gut and what's happening physically. And some of these physical stimulation techniques can also be very helpful as well. We'll come back to this in a moment, but I also want to just take another step to the side. We can talk about sleep.
Yeah.
Why is sleep so important? I think sleep is something, I mean, I think when people don't sleep for a sustained period of time, they realize why it's important. But what's the impact of sleep on the rest of our body and our well-being and our health?
Yeah, I mean, sleep is foundational. If you're not sleeping, it's pretty impossible to heal. It's when your whole body resets and detoxifies and cleans house, especially the brain. You know, when you're awake, your brain needs to be on. And it's only when you're sleeping that it can actually clean out the metabolic waste and any toxins. So there's a system called the glymphatic system. It's a combination of your lymphatic system and your glial cells. And it's almost like, think of a car wash. Your brain actually shrinks, and the cerebral spinal fluid washes through the brain and kind of clears out all the waste that, if it stays in the brain, you know, triggers an immune response and then triggers inflammation. And inflammation in the brain can present as fuzzy thinking, poor memory, fatigue, you know, the inability to recall words or remember where you left your keys, that kind of stuff. And it also, if you're not sleeping, you can be really tired, and fatigue causes your body to release chemicals like cortisol to kind of give you energy, but then that throws off your metabolism. It throws off everything else. So it's kind of one of those foundational pillars that when you're sleeping, everything else works better.
Yeah. So let's then, you sort of touched on it a bit there, but let's come then to more about this relationship between when our sympathetic nervous system is overstimulated or our parasympathetic system is not kicking in. How does that affect our sleep? How does that relationship work?
Yeah, it's two things actually. So another aspect of being in the parasympathetic nervous system relates to your heart rate and specifically your heart rate variability, which is really a measure of resilience. If you've ever been to the doctor's office, you know, they put the stethoscope on your heart and then they have you breathe in and breathe out. What they're really looking for is how your heart rate changes between the in-breath and the exhale. It's supposed to accelerate a bit when you breathe in and calm down when you breathe out. That out-breath is kind of activating your parasympathetic nervous system. And the difference, your ability to be resilient and toggle and adjust is really a measure of health. And so what's interesting is when you have kind of, when you're in that stress state, that sympathetic state all the time, it compromises your heart rate variability. So your heart rate's supposed to relax when you're sleeping. And when it's beating too fast, you never really get into those REM restorative states. So that's one aspect of it. Another aspect, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, and that's when people can sort of sleep through the night, but wake up feeling unrefreshed and unrestored from that sleep, which it's as I often say to people, it's not how many hours sleep you get, it's the quality of sleep you get in those hours.
Exactly, quality, not quantity. The other challenge is that, you know, your body doesn't work in isolation. Your nervous system talks to your endocrine system. And your endocrine system is what's in charge of releasing certain hormones. So for example, the sleep hormone is melatonin. And that has kind of a tangential, or it works in tandem with your energy hormone, your stress hormone, cortisol. Ideally, it's supposed to be like a teeter-totter. When melatonin is high, cortisol is low. Ideally, cortisol is high in the morning so that you wake up and you don't sleep in past your alarm. And then as the day wears on, it gets lower. And by nighttime, cortisol is low, which allows melatonin to be high. But if your body thinks it's in danger, you know, it needs to stay alive. So it needs to release cortisol to kind of give you the energy and the focus to survive. So high levels of cortisol at night throw off sleep, the sleep hormone melatonin. And that makes it, that might be like you're physically exhausted, but your mind is racing. You're thinking about things that, you know, are making you more worried and causing greater release of cortisol. And it becomes this vicious cycle.
And I think having awareness sometimes that that's what's going on in of itself can be very helpful, right? Because I think it can be quite crazy making when someone is realizing I'm not sleeping, I can't switch off, I can't rest. What's wrong, when they can see actually there are real hormonal imbalances which are underpinning what's actually going on.
I love that. I think awareness is so important because once you're aware of it, then you can make a different choice, right? It's a pattern interrupt, right? Oh gosh, look at me. I'm worried about something that I can't, my daughter has this funny line. She's like, that's not a today Carly problem. That's a tomorrow Carly problem.
That's great.
And I love it because it kind of like, I don't need to spend energy worrying about the like homework that's due in a week right now, that I can do that tomorrow.
That's great. That's really great. I'd love to break down a bit more then some of the, we'll come to things people can do about this in a little bit, but to break down some of the factors or some of the variables that can be causing one's parasympathetic system to be out of balance and therefore impacting their sleep. So if we were almost to kind of explore almost like a bit of a checklist of some of those areas, what are some of the things that people watching this interview should be paying attention to?
Yeah, it can be both physical, mental, and emotional. And trauma actually can be a huge trigger for kind of sympathetic dominance, because you can get, there's a bit of a loop, right? You know, the problem starts, you resolve it, it comes to completion, and then you move on. But what can happen in trauma, especially trauma that we're unable to process, so we disassociate or freeze, we can't really lean into it and complete it. So it's kind of like background noise that never goes away and kind of keeps turning on our stress response because we haven't really processed it because it's too much for us to step into. That's your...
I mean, you know, and that that trauma, again, can have, as we talked about in the, it's kind of separate conference, but in the Trauma and Mind Body Super Conference, there's so many facets and ingredients to that trauma. And I think when it comes to, you know, conference like this on fatigue, people can often go, oh, well, trauma's not important. I have kind of energy issues. But as you say, trauma has a big impact on the nervous system, and the nervous system has a big impact on sleep and our overall energy as well. So going back to the sort of physical, the mental, the emotional, what are some of the physical variables that can be impacting someone's system?
Yeah. Toxicity plays a really big role. For example, most people don't really think about this, but there's a lot of toxicity in the mouth that can physically kind of block the vagus nerve. So we talked a little bit about how the vagus nerve travels down the neck. The neck is a really big bottleneck in the body. You know, there's a lot going on in the neck. You have your structure, you've got your muscles, you've got your nerves, like your vagus nerve, you've got your veins, you've got your lymph, and they can all kind of compress into each other. Like think of being in the middle seat in an airplane, you know, with two linebackers next to you, like you're not getting the armrest. You know, imagine that you're toxins trying to drain down and everything's congested and compressed. It's interesting because a lot of the practitioners that I work with and some researchers have identified, Michael Van Eckler calls it vagus nerve infection hypothesis, which I'll get into, but the majority of people with any kind of chronic ailment have some kind of vagus nerve toxicity or compression where the vagus nerve is congested and so therefore not compromised. And that can be, you know, we have a lot of pathogens in the mouth. It's not just dental amalgams that are kind of off-gassing metal, which is a neurotoxin. It can also be cavitations. It can be root canals. It can be any kind of gum or mouth disease. And all of that's draining along your trigeminal nerve, which then intersects with your vagus nerve. And can kind of cause congestion and compression. This is a reason that I actually like essential oils and topically applied remedies, because when you topically apply something, especially in areas where the skin is really thin, like behind the ears or above the ears, it gets into the system really quickly. Whereas when you ingest things, it has to go, you know, through the digestive process and the liver before going back to the blood, to the lymph. So even castor oil, you know, something that you can get in a really accessible way, that helps to kind of decongest the lymph. You know, mint oil, spearmint is a really good one. Any oils that kind of are grounding and so pull directionality, you know, lymph flows in a one-way direction and that's oftentimes the bottleneck. So like vetiver is a great one. Anything that you can topically apply to your neck and help to kind of move out the bottleneck. Think of it as a traffic accident, right? You need to clear away the blockage in order for everything to properly drain. And so that's one of those underlying issues, you know, and talking about fatigue, you know, chronic fatigue syndrome is often correlated with some kind of vagus nerve infection because it's this low level infection that's kind of sending out that sickness response. And what happens when we're sick, we get fatigued, we get immobilized, you know, we have pain. It's all designed to kind of keep us still so that we can heal and move out of it. But if we never quite complete that loop of healing, and there's always this low-level infection, especially kind of on the information highway where the nervous system sends a lot of its signals, then that can compromise everything else.
And I'd just love to take a sidestep for a moment just to say a bit more about essential oils, because I think there'll be people watching this that won't be familiar with essential oils. And we should say that you're the founder of Vibrant Blue Oils. And I'm a fan because you very kindly sent some free samples, which I brought home from work. My wife is really into essential oils. So suddenly they were sort of wafting around the kitchen. They're fantastic. just say a bit for people that aren't familiar with essential oils, sort of what they are and just a few of the key principles about how they can work with them.
Yeah, essential oils are basically the distilled essence of plants. So it can be flowers, it can be barks, it can be trees. And what most people don't realize is over 50% of our pharmaceutical drugs are derived from plants. You know, they have powerful healing constituents. White willow bark has evolved into aspirin. valerian root is Valium. They can be very calming for our nervous system, and they work by putting the body back in balance, by basically allowing the body to function at its best capacity, so then it heals itself. They're not really designed to treat symptoms, but because they're so concentrated, and also they're really, really small and fat-based. And so that allows them to both get into the bloodstream. You know, when you put something on your skin, it gets in your system in 20 minutes. When you smell something, smell keeps us out of danger. We can smell predator odor that gets into the brain, actually the amygdala, which is the fear center, immediately. You know, most people don't realize that nose cells are brain cells. And also because they're so small and fat soluble, they can pass the blood-brain barrier into the brain. This is the biggest challenge with treating the brain, is that, you know, it's really hard to get things through the blood-brain barrier. Like, they can't do chemo in the brain because the molecules are too large. So it's just, I mean, it's a wonderful adjunct to what you're already doing. I don't know that it's a replacement, but it can serve a really valuable purpose. Yes. Kind of support your health and get access of remedies into your brain and body.
And I think health is never just one thing anyway, right? And particularly when we're talking about calming and switching off the sympathetic nervous system, part of that is, how do we come at that from different angles and perspectives to create an overall experience that allows and helps the system then to settle? So I'd love to hear a bit more about some of those other ingredients. So when you're working with someone to help them kind of activate mm-hmm. more of the parasympathetic response, what are some of that? We've talked about essential oils. What are some of the other kind of tools that you would use to help support that?
I really try to meet them where they're at. And the first state, like when my kids were little, one of the preschool teachers used to say, connect before you correct. You know, we'd be at the playground, my son would throw sand, and instead of yelling at him in that moment where his pupils were really dilated and he was really sympathetic, I'd scoop him up, take him over to the swings, calm him down, make sure the pupils were small, and then say, like, listen, if we can't play nice, we can't play. We're going to have to either go home, or you're going to have to promise you're going to behave better. And when they can hear you, you know, it's a much better connection. So if you're dealing with chronic fatigue, whatever you're dealing with, let's like get you kind of in that balanced state first. So I like a combination of clove and lime for two reasons. Clove is super stimulatory and really high in this really healing constituent called eugenol. So it gets into the system really quickly. I combine it with lime because it has super small molecules. And then I dilute it with fractionated coconut oil. Dilution, there are different carrier oils that you can use with oils to kind of slow the speed or increase kind of the viscosity of how you get things into the skin. Fractionated coconut oil is thin. So what you want to do with stimulation, think of it like an acupuncture needle. You're really trying to do a quick hit. You know, an oil like jojoba is more of like a slow release supplement. So you use oils differently. Another really good technique, if someone's feeling very anxious and overwhelmed, you know, the brain, which is your expertise, there are different areas of the brain. It's not just one organ, you know, like your frontal lobe does something different than your amygdala. And there's a whole branch of chiropractic called functional neurologists who are looking at and assessing what area of the brain is overactive and how do we balance that by like stimulating the other hemisphere. You know, and your nose, your olfactory channel goes directly to the forehead, which is kind of your prefrontal cortex. It's your executive function area, but it's also kind of the calming to the amygdala, which is kind of the danger perception. And I'm sure you can explain this better than I can, but I love...
You're doing great. Keep going.
Okay. You know, that example of you're walking in the woods and you think you see a snake. That's your amygdala sensing danger. You jump back before even consciously registering it. And then your frontal cortex does a second look and says, oh no, that's a stick. You're safe. So the frontal cortex is kind of the gauge that keeps you calm, keeps you from overreacting. If you're chronically in a stress state, it's almost like you're building the muscle of your amygdala. So it's called amygdala hijack. You can overreact to things more often. And so one of the ways to unravel that pattern is to engage your frontal cortex more. And one of the easiest ways to do that is just to smell anything. It doesn't need to be a specific oil. If you like lavender, that's great. If you like citrus, that's great. If you don't own oils, but you happen to have a tangerine, just peel it and smell it. You know, the oils live in the peel. And another great hack that I learned from our colleague, Titus Chu, who's a functional neurologist, he was telling me that when you're having any kind of anxiety attack, that is your right frontal lobe that's overactive. So to balance that, you want to stimulate the left frontal lobe. So the easiest way to do that is literally plug your right nostril with your thumb and smell anything through your left nostril. And just like food, you know, if you're ravenous and then you have a couple bites, you feel better. There's kind of this off switch for smell. So usually if you hold, or I'll show you, if you hold a bottle like just a couple inches below the nose, usually by 3 to 5 breaths, you stop smelling. You're kind of complete. And you'll notice, I used to have anxiety attacks all the time. And, you know, it's really easy to carry an oil in your pocket or your purse. So the more I did it, the less often I would have them. So I speak both from personal and professional experience. It's a really good way to kind of shift gears in your brain.
I think what's also really powerful about that is often with anxiety attacks, the anxiety about the anxiety is almost the worst piece. It's like the anticipation of I'm going to have an anxiety attack and I can't do anything about it. When you know that you've got a reliable strategy that the vast majority of the time, you know, is going to help calm things down, it takes the anxiety, the kind of the anticipation away, which then means you're less likely to have them in the first place. So it really helps break that cycle.
It completely breaks the cycle. And I also think that it helps, you know, it's interesting. I didn't realize how anxious I was until I started unraveling it and how much it interfered with my productivity. Because I think it gets in the way of your ability to focus. Yeah. So that's been a huge help.
So coming back to some of the specifics around sleep, I'm thinking someone that's watching this and is kind of tracking along what we're saying around the role of the nervous system, and they're hearing that essential oils can be a really helpful way to work with calming and settling the system. What are some of the other practical things that one can do specifically to help with either preparation for sleep or, as we were talking about earlier, encouraging depth of sleep?
Yeah, I mean, well, let's talk about, so melatonin is the sleep hormone, and that's released by the pineal gland in response to darkness. It's actually right in the middle of your brain, like between your eyes. And so anything you can do to kind of create more of a natural light dark situation. So not watching your screen, or if you do need to do work, there are blue light blocking glasses, you know, maybe not engaging in stimulatory activities right before bed. Anything you can do to calm your system, like I actually love Epsom salt baths with lavender. I do 2 cups of Epsom salt, 1 cup of baking soda. And then I literally use the bath as kind of my mixing tub. I drop about 3 drops of lavender in and just mix it in the tub before adding water, because you know, water and oil don't mix. So you don't want the oil floating on top. But that's a really nice kind of relaxing ritual. I like to read before bed, which makes my eyes tired. You know, we have a formula that we call circadian rhythm that is designed to help trigger, it helps detoxify the pineal gland and trigger the natural release of melatonin. You know, and anything that you're topically applying, this point right above the ear, it's the skin is really thin, and also it's kind of eye level, as you can see. So it just helps it track towards the pineal gland quickly.
For someone that's watching this and thinking, well, I've had sleep issues for years and nothing's going to work and it's not possible for it to change, with all the experience you've got, both working with people, but also the dozens of people you've interviewed through the conference that you did, what would you say to that person in terms of that there is hope? How would you sort of encourage someone that it's possible to change potentially even years of sort of bad sleep patterns?
Yeah, I feel there are 2 things. First of all, anything you can always unravel. You know, we live in Seattle, and one time we were going on a road trip and we drove probably 20 miles in the wrong direction before we realized it. And, you know, we were still able to turn around and make that happen. And so I would say anything's possible. Of course, you can turn it around. And then also embrace the small wins. You know, Rome wasn't built in a day. You know, Weight Watchers is so cute. You know, if you lose a pound, they're like, yay. You know, if you've been struggling for sleep for years, and there are different aspects of sleep, there's kind of the inability to fall asleep, which is high cortisol levels at night. And then there's different kinds of night waking. I have a really good guide on kind of what is the underlying sleep issue. Cause sometimes I think people just try to tranquilize, you know, like lavender. It's interesting. It's like Benadryl. Benadryl can knock you out or it can make you hyper. Lavender is not, you know, it doesn't work for everyone. For some people, it's very relaxing. For other people, it's very stimulatory. So if you've just been trying kind of general tranquilizing techniques, you know, if your issue is that you're exhausted, you know, but you can't fall asleep, you can't, you know, calm your mind, melatonin, sublingual melatonin gets into the brain easier again, because you're trying to get things into the brain and it's fat soluble and oil based and small, you know, we have a circadian rhythm blend. If you're waking up at 1 a.m. and you're wide awake, that's nocturnal hypoglycemia. That's often that your blood sugar dipped too low. And then your adrenals kind of release emergency energy. And then anything you can do to support your pancreas, like rose geranium is a really good oil, because the pancreas releases the hormone insulin that helps carry the sugar back into the cells so that you're less awake, you know, and sleepy. If you're waking up around 3 and maybe you need to use the bathroom, 3 is kind of when your liver is the most active. So there are a lot of things you can do to support your liver. There are supplements like milk thistle. You can put castor oil over your liver. The castor oil has become kind of complicated. They've made it into a whole pack that requires time, or you can just wear like a ratty t-shirt and just put it on your body and, you know, the t-shirt might get stained. We have liver oils too. You can take things like binders that grab toxins in your gut and make sure they're carried out so that they're not reabsorbed. And, you know, it's a little bit like Sisyphus. The liver pushes the toxins out. And then if they get reabsorbed, they have to, you know, keep working through the same issue.
And for people that are perhaps a little nervous around using essential oils because they, you know, they're not recommended necessarily for them by a practitioner, can you just say a few words about giving people some sort of confidence in working with them by themselves? You know, I suppose in a sense, what's the worst that can happen and what are the things that one should avoid, you know, for example, not ingesting them?
Yeah, honestly, I've been doing this for over 10 years. And, you know, if you're worried, start very slowly, topically apply it to the bottom of your feet for two reasons. There's some oils like clove, oregano, thyme that can feel kind of hot, which means that they make your skin look a little red and they might feel warm. But the bottom of your feet has really thick skin. So that's a really good place to apply them, especially, you know, don't use it on children under the age of 2, but for kids that are over 2, you can dilute them. You can cut them with another oil. It can be something you already own in your house, like olive oil or coconut oil in your kitchen. You can just start by smelling them. You know, citrus is a really good one to start with. Orange, in fact, you know, a lot of the citrus like neroli and bergamot are kind of known for lifting your mood, but they're a little expensive. Orange is like the cheaper cousin and it's usually very affordable and kids really like it. So just play with it, just smell it and see if it helps you feel better or calmer, you know, and also sleep. Yes, it happens at night, but what you do during the day kind of affects your sleep at night. So don't, maybe like you were saying, shift the focus. Like one thing I've integrated in 2021 is kind of scheduled joy. Because I was reading that book, Radical Remission, that you don't just want to like eliminate the negative emotions. You want to kind of crowd them out with positive ones. So I actually have a timer on my phone. And at 3 o'clock every afternoon, I play like one of my favorite songs and sing at the top of my lungs and, you know, dance around my living room. But it's amazing.
I've got to ask you what the song is, Jodie, because we need the visuals.
Yeah, I love ABBA. Actually, yeah. ABBA's a good one. Any 70s music. I watched that Bee Gees documentary recently. You know, it's just, it's nostalgic and it's silly.
Yeah, it's great. You know, it's my wife is currently being a superhero, homeschooling 3 kids. And that's one of the things that she started doing is homeschooling because of lockdown, obviously. And one of the things that she starts doing is just putting on random songs at certain points in the day and just making everyone get up and dance, because you just got to break the energy sometimes of what's happening.
That's, yeah, my daughter is studying for her SATs, so she likes Macklemore. So sometimes we, you know, and we've even, she's had me do some TikTok dances. I'm not good, but it's just fun, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and just coming to just a few really practical things with essential oils. So maybe say a bit about why it's important to buy from a good source, and also say perhaps a little bit about just that people shouldn't be swallowing them and ingesting them. They're to be used sort of just, yeah, a few of just the very sort of basic key principles of people.
Yeah, I would never tell anyone to ingest them, mostly because I don't think it's efficient. Like, inhalation is the most efficient way, and it doesn't need to be complicated. You can literally smell directly from the bottle. That's called direct inhalation. Topical application, I think, is the second best way. You know, certain areas, the skin is thinner and it's kind of near the veins. So applying it on, you know, the pulse points will get it into the system faster. So when you're starting, maybe don't use those, like start on the bottom of the feet. And you can tell peppermint is a really easy one to start with. It both kind of suppresses your appetite and can be energizing and clear the sinuses. And you can just smell it, or you can put a little bit on the bottom of your feet. And often you can see how quickly it gets into your system because you can taste it in your mouth really quickly. In terms of quality, I think there's a lot of fear tactics that are used. My number one thing is really just try to buy it organic, you know, because they're highly concentrated. So if they're grown with pesticides, you're concentrating pesticides. But to get started, that feels like a barrier to entry. So just, you know, smell them. If they smell like the weird candle store in the mall and completely synthetic, they're not your thing. But as long as it smells good to you, I really do think there's kind of an innate intelligence, you know, for what we're attracted to. We crave hamburgers when we need iron. We might crave chocolate when we need magnesium. If it smells good to you, that's a good choice.
Yeah, that's awesome. Jody, for people that want to find out more about you and your work, obviously that's I know you've got a book that at the time of broadcasting this will have come out. So talk a bit about that, because I think it's also a great way for people to go deeper into this.
Yeah, this is actually, if you've never, Amazon, Random House priced it really affordable. It's like $20, but it's essential oils to boost the brain and heal the body. And what I really try to do is go deep in explaining why and how essential oils work, and also how to use them. I don't think that you need to use them for everything, but I think that there are a couple things that they're particularly well suited for. And if you were interested in learning more about how to activate your parasympathetic branch of your nervous system, I have a free 25 easy ways to do it. And again, avoid overwhelm. Just pick one. You know, one of them is like using your tongue to paint the roof of your mouth. Like, that's easy. You don't need to own anything to do it. But go to boostthebrain.com, boosttthebrainbook.com/gift.
That's awesome. Jody, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you.